mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
For word of mouth.
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 From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Casey Matthews seemed to have a perfect life. A terrific husband, a place in the suburbs, an adorable son with another baby on the way. Her nicely paced plans for a second child went awry when her daughter, Andy, was born at just 25 weeks, weighing under 2 pounds. The traumatic birth launched her family into an emotional and logistical ringer through surgeries and scares that did not end when her tiny baby came home. Nothing about Casey's bright, sunny disposition belied that long slog when I met her at a writer's gathering and reading last year. I later learned that she had a book deal and was honored to be asked to read her memoir of the experience and asked to write a blurb for it. So I claim no objectivity in asking Casey Matthews to join us to talk about Preemie. It's a candid and affecting new book of her not just getting through it, but expanding and growing along with her little baby. Welcome to the program, Casey.
Yeah, I'm honored to be here.
So I'd love to give listeners a sense of that moment when everything just changed for you. Read from Preemie, please, if you would, that moment when you initially went to the ER. And you can set it up for us if you need to explain.
Sure. Halfway through my pregnancy, everything's going along just as normal. And suddenly I'm having some cramps, not feeling great. And they say, come on in, we want to check you out. So my husband's dropped me off with our two-year-old, and I'm in being examined by a doctor. And here's what happens from there. The doctor had just begun the exam when Lee walked in with two-year-old Tucker in his arms. My hospital gown was pulled up to my stomach and the doctor's head was between my legs. I smiled at them. Lee leaned back against the wall and offered me a wink. I was about to introduce him to the doctor when she let out a gasp. Oh my God, she said, you're 3 centimeters dilated. I'm not sure who called them, but a bunch of nurses were suddenly in the room scrambling around me. What does this mean? I asked. The nurse next to me was tearing apart a blood pressure cuff. It means you're not going home until this baby is born. But it's November, I told her. My baby isn't due until March. It was like I had a lead weight on my chest. I couldn't get a full breath. I can't stay here until March. I clutched a nurse's arm. She was walking backwards, facing me, guiding the gurney down the hall. I dug my fingers into her flesh. I needed to know she was real. She looked at me. Her eyes, framed in dark circles, softened. I thought I'd found my sympathetic audience. You don't understand, I said to her in a more coherent, controlled voice. This sort of thing doesn't happen to me. She held my gaze for a moment, and I waited. A gold cross swung at the base of her neck. She continued to look at me, and then she said, it does now.
This kind of thing doesn't happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
There'd been a no illusion that your life was perfect, but there hadn't been any major catastrophes up until that point.
Nada. Nope.
So at this point, you're advised that your baby, they want to keep it inside of you as long as possible.
That's right. And as long as you can keep that baby inside, the better off it'll be. And they're not even talking days, they're talking hours.
Okay, so when your water broke, absolutely no choice. You know, everything just changed at
that
instant.
Yeah, so from that moment where, you know, I'm begging this nurse to tell me this isn't really happening, they hooked me up to machines, monitors, medicines, and tried to hold off labor. And they were able to do so for 24 hours until the next morning when a nurse came in and said, you're doing it. You're reversing labor. This is really happening. Gush, water breaks. Mm. All hell breaks loose, racing off for an emergency C-section.
And at that point, you don't even know if you're having a boy or a girl.
Not at all. And interestingly, it happened to be my own OBGYN who was doing rounds and came on, which was such a blessing because he just brought this calmness to me. And I asked him, do you remember from any of the ultrasounds, boy or girl? Because we didn't want to know. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, that was, you know, we wanted to know. We were faced with this, needing to come up with names, not knowing even if we should name a baby this young.
Mm. And you do have to give this birth through cesarean section, of course. They remove the baby. We have a picture on the website, which is a link to the photo gallery on your website.
Yeah.
So tiny.
Yeah. And I didn't see her then. So
She was intubated immediately.
Immediately.
I guess.
So you're in a room full of six labor delivery doctors and nurses and pediatric. It's wild. And next thing, the baby's out. I heard someone said the baby's out. I didn't see. We were told you won't hear a cry because of the intubation. And it was kind of this amazing moment where all of a sudden we heard this little cry, like a box had been opened and closed shut from her. And that gave us this sense that she might be strong. We didn't even know it was a she. And I suddenly was desperate to know, is it a girl or a boy? And ripples are going through the OR trying to find out, and took a few minutes to say, you have a girl, you have a new baby girl. And we never saw her. Off she was whisked.
And
away.
When you did finally see her, it was a shocking moment to you. How did you describe her? Like
an alien?
A potato with little tiny arms and legs.
That's right. That's right.
And what was going on for you? Was it like, you know, I'd done something wrong? I think that's one of the things you thought to yourself.
100%. So that was my whole thing. I kept saying, why is this happening? Why? Somebody tell me why. And all the nurses kept saying, this is nothing you did. We won't know why. Later in my research, I found out 40% of preemie parents never know why. There is no medical explanation. That was really helpful down the road to find out I wasn't alone. At that time, I didn't know. And even though they kept telling me this is nothing you did, I kept chronicling everything I'd ate, did, exercise, the bath I took. This has to have been something I did. And that blame, that self-blame, I carried that for years, years and years.
Well, this is so much of what the book is about. It's not just, you know, making choices about how to, you're careening back and forth from the hospital in your home for months before the baby comes
84
home.
Days.
84 days. And then after that, you know, there are infections, there are surgeries, things just pop up all of a sudden. There's no perfect protection for this little girl.
No, there isn't. And then there's a deep, deep loneliness, because you have to really keep these babies who are highly vulnerable. Their lungs are the cornerstone to them becoming healthy. So they can't be exposed to outside risks of a cold from the drugstore, the grocery store, you know, any kind of gathering, public gathering. So you're really left alone. And it is a deeply lonely, lonely time.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Casey Matthews. She's the author of a new memoir called Preemie. You can look at the pictures. You can see a link to more on Preemie, including some pictures of her teeny tiny baby, Andy, when she was first born at 25 weeks at wordofmouthradio.org. So this was something that for you, you know, not only because it broken up your perfect life, but you had to do a lot of things that were really far outside of your comfort zone. You had to assert yourself with doctors. You had to call on parts of yourself that you'd never had to call upon before.
That's right. Part of the book is really, what are my lessons? What came out of this? And you mentioned that was a real big one, finding my voice, standing up to doctors and saying, no, that's not acceptable, because I never thought that was something I could do. And for months and months and months, I would not. I could not. It's silly, silly thing. People coming to our home once she was home, asking them to remove their shoes at the door. You can't imagine the turmoil that caused me, and thinking, you know, I've been raised to graciously welcome people in my home, not ask them to take their shoes off at the door. And I feel like, you know, my mom's imaginary self is standing there looking at me, how dare can you do that, you know? And it wasn't until someone said to me, you are your daughter's voice. She's relying on you. We're talking about life and death here. Oh, what am I doing?
Yeah.
You know, please just take your shoes off at the door.
And you even ended up like homeschooling your kids at one point, you know, just like there's no way. Or when they came in the door, all their clothes come off. They go right in the washing
machine.
That's
right. Yep. Tucker was in preschool, you know, so he's coming home. He's our biggest threat with the germs that he's bringing home. So there he is. I literally am stripping him down at the door. And then we're right in the heart of the cold and flu season, and he's headed back into it. And we had to make a decision. And the decision was to keep both kids at home and keep them sequestered and safe.
Because you had to also make a lot of decisions about where traditional medicine worked, meaning Western medicine, let's say, and then where alternative medicine worked. How did you make that kind of distinction?
Well, it was wonderful, because early on we met a woman who dubbed an energy healer, and she opened up all this world that I had known didn't exist.
Outside of your comfort zone, seeing an energy healer.
Exactly. But boy, I'll tell you, she was fantastic. And what I love so much about her is she opened up this entire world of alternative medicines. all the while continuing to encourage us to walk the path of traditional medicine. So there was never an either or here. It was always a both. Follow both paths, parallel paths, and I think they complement each other so well. I like to call it, rather than alternative medicine, complementary medicine, because when you link the two together, the results are fantastic.
Now, when you write a memoir about this kind of trauma, and I've seen it in all of the blurbs, you know, you become, I said you were like a warrior you'd want on our side. People say you're a big sister, a best friend. You know, you suddenly have this role as some kind of guide for mothers of premature children or people who know them. Is that a role you're comfortable with?
I think that role is the reason I wrote the book, because I didn't have that. Andy was born 11 years ago. Facebook groups weren't out there. The webs, you know, it was just starting. So I truly could not have been more alone in my world, desperate for another woman to share her story and say, I've walked this path. You can walk it too. So that's when I said, I'm going to stand up and be that person for other women. Sit on the end of their bed and say, look, you can get through this. Look at this girl. She's fabulous. Yours can be too.
Yeah, you see the picture of her on the cover. Yeah. She is so alive.
Yes, indeed.
Fantastic kid. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming in
and thank you
your memoir.
Thank you, Virginia.
You can see some photos of Andy and her family from Casey, that's with a K, Matthew's webpage and blog, and more on her new memoir, Preemie. There's a link to all that at wordofmouthradio.org. You can also find links and follow us and post your thoughts. Have you been through a similar experience? Were you ready to give up hope? Well, there's a lot more there in Casey's book. You can do that on Facebook and on Twitter. Now coming up, a Supreme Court scholar, watcher, and interpreter joins us to talk about today's historic decision when Word of Mouth returns.